The Linux Link Tech Show. The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to the latest in GNU Linux and technology. An hour of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open source, open mics. Live from the Linux Link Tech Show studio, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up, and take it away. Take it away.
It's the holiday episode.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Ho, ho, happy holiday. Happy Hanukkah.
Jingle, jingle, jingle.
No, wait.
Merry Christmas.
So laminating that, links on the...
Laminating links.
Yeah.
We got a full house tonight. Me and Dan.
And...
Hey, I'm radiator. On remote.
And your own remote. And a six-pack of Samuel Adams Boston Lager.
Happy holidays. Come on. What am I doing?
What are you doing, man?
I don't know. You tell me.
So, Link, what's going on, man? I see you bought yourself a new toy.
I did. I bought myself a toy. Gorkhan told us a while back that he was going to let us know how his new ApeTek DV5900 DV camcorder worked. And he sent me an email today saying, you know, how fantastic it was. And he included some media files for me to check out. And I thought it was pretty cool, so I had to go right out and get one. And I went out and bought the ApeTek DV5100M, which is the only one that I could find that I could actually, like, buy and have in my hand at the same time. At Walgreens, as a matter of fact.
How much was it?
It was $99, I think.
$99. And what do you get for your $99?
Well, you get a little DV camcorder, a little handheld DV camcorder that does records OGG file audio. It takes still photos, and it does MPEG-4 video capture. So,
it actually has OGG support. I mean, it'll record
in
OGG.
It records to OGG files. Yes.
I'm surprised that does that.
Gorkhan says his also plays MP3s. I don't know if mine does or not. I didn't try it. So.
Now, it records. Does it play back the video for you?
Gorkhan says it does not OGG WAV files. I thought mine did OGG files. Oh, I'll have to look at the manual again.
Yeah, you better
Either
look
way,
at the
it's
manual.
It's really cool.
Now, it plays the media files, too?
I haven't tried it on mine, to be honest.
Does it have an LCD display
yes,
on it?
It has a nice little LCD display. The video that it takes is not fantastic because it's just a CMOS camera. However, it's like usable,
right?
You know, if we wanted to use it to do some like video casting kind of stuff or something, I don't see where there'd be a problem with that at all. It's not bad.
So it will play back media files, though. You can use it like an MP3 player.
It'll play back anything that you capture on it. Gorkhan says his will play back media files without a problem.
Okay, so you can...
I haven't tried yet, but I will.
Does it mount like a USB mass storage device?
Yeah, it mounts as a mass storage device. Interestingly enough, when you plug it in, the LCD display asks you whether you want to mount it as a mass storage device or you want to use, like, live. I'm assuming that you can use it as a, like, a live webcam kind of thing. However, I don't know if that really works under Linux. So I just picked mass storage device, and as soon as I did that, two different devices popped up and mounted themselves on my computer. The first one was the internal, I think it's 60 meg memory, and the second one was the external 256 meg CF card that I put in it, which had my videos. And, you know, they pulled right up as ASF files, MPEG-4 ASF files. Which M player handles without a problem, or probably anything else that you have the codecs for as well. And they, you know, they play right along and do what they're supposed to do. It's really neat.
Cool, man.
The wife gave me permission to order the GPX 2.
So right.
She told me to order it tonight.
That plays games, video, audio. How much is it?
$179.
Nice.
You know, that will be a nifty little toy, too.
Takes a flash. What is that? What is that type of flash? Yours tapes. What type of storage does yours use?
CF.
I think that's the really thin, small ones, right?
No, that's the bigger ones, compact flash.
The compact flash. SD.
SD cards.
Yeah, I believe that the GXP2 takes SD cards. Bum, bum, bum. But we'll see. It's finally out, and I got to order it. So
sweet. Hopefully it works, man.
Hope it does work.
Hopefully it works.
It'll work better than the day of I... What was the other day? I listened to my iPod at work for like an hour. But I'll attack on the 20 minutes going into work. And then after work, I listened to the iPod for about 40 minutes. And I went to turn down the volume, and it shut itself off. I was out of battery already. Freshly charged iPod. Got about 2.5-3 hours out of it.
Nothing like that iRiver, huh, that'll play for, 40 hours on one single AA battery.
Yeah, I want the quality of the iRiver. I don't want the quality of the iRiver, obviously. I want the best parts of the iRiver put into an iPod.
No, what do you mean the quality of the iRiver? You use that thing hard.
I did use it hard, and then that switch, and that just bums me out. But you don't have that kind of same kind of like mechanical issue that you do on the iPod. I don't think as much like I don't know. Now the iAudio you
I
have doesn't
you
have
your,
a ro- like a little disc
your,
that you rotate.
iPod as hard as you use the iRiver, that your iPod would have been dead long ago.
It was already dying before I got the iRiver.
The iAudio has two little wheels on the top.
Right.
One on the top, one on the bottom. And there's also some other buttons on the side. Speaking of my iAudio, my new twat episode that's coming out tomorrow, I recorded that with the iAudio.
Oh, cool.
The quality is actually pretty good. I was surprised.
Let me get this out of the way. This weekend, I had my daughter install Ubuntu. And I videotaped it, and I got 40 minutes of video to go through, and it was a pretty good thing. The hardest part she had, of course, was the partitioning. The only assistance I really gave her was helping her pronounce words she didn't know how to spell, read.
But she's 7 years old.
Yeah. But here's a video clip. You won't see the video, but here's kind of how it went.
Yeah.
Ready? Oh, wait. Hang on, let me click on there. There we go. There we go.
We're installing a CD.
What's the CD?
Daddy has a gun! Daddy has a gun!
Dang, I can't believe you, man. You're threatening your children with guns?
Yeah.
I'm going to report you to Child Welfare Services, man.
I said to my wife, I said, you got to watch this video. It's hilarious. And I didn't want her to see the name because I didn't want to ruin it, but she opened her eyes and saw the name before I could play the video. And she's like, why would you name it something like that? That's horrible. Daddy has a gun. What she's doing is she's looking right on top of my bookcase up there. If you look up there, all you see is the butt of the crossbow.
You got a crossbow.
Yeah, the crossbow that's, like, broken up there. But all she saw was the butt of the crossbow.
By the way, crossbows are legal to go hunting in Pennsylvania now.
Yeah?
So you can actually go in the woods with one of those things if you wanted to.
So, there you go. Daddy has a gun. Which then I thought would be great for, like, a production company. Daddy has a gun presents.
There you go. Being the fact that you have two girls, that's a really good phrase for both of them to learn.
Especially when they're in their teenage years, right?
Daddy.
Right.
Hey, they want a video stream for the show. Yeah, okay. When we get the T1 put in, then we could...
When we're hosted on AOL.
User contributed T1, right?
Yes.
When we're hosted on AOL, we'll have video.
Right.
Yeah.
AOL.
Oh, speaking of AOL, which leads to Twit, which then leads to Twat, did you listen to the piracy One by Seal?
Yes.
That was good.
That was a good episode.
I really liked that. That was I love all the Twilight. I mean, they're really great, but I was really getting into it.
Iron Geek is really good. He's my favorite. His security episodes are really good.
Yeah, do you want me to call him up and get him, give him your phone number? Or you guys?
No, man, I'm happily married.
But yeah, and I'm kind of only bringing up the Piracy one because that's the last one I listened to today. But it was really good. And Link, you got interviewed for
Bash Potter.
Unreliable Bash Potter.
Yes, I did.
Bless you.
That whole that cold creeping up on me again. Yeah, I did. I got. I guess I got honorable mention in the. Oh boy, what was it? What was the first one that I got mentioned in? You guys remember?
First time. Oh, geez.
First time was in Tech Republic.
Tech Republic. And this time it's in Desktop Linux, right?
The first time this week. It's not like the first time, because people have mentioned it in books and all kinds
of
stuff.
And there was also a second one today.
But Tech Republic this week. Right. And today it was, well, after I was mentioned in Tech Republic for Bash Potter, one of the editors from, what the heck was it? Desktop Linux. Contacted me and asked me some questions so that he could put an article up in Desktop Linux, which is published today. Actually, yesterday. Published yesterday. And it's a good little article. Quite short, just like the other one. But yeah, go right in and read it. I'll copy the URL into the chat log. And you can check it out.
The article is like this brand new application called BashPod. I think it was the second one. Was it the Tech Republic one? I'm like, wait a second.
Yeah,
new application.
No, I saw that, yeah.
This has been out for like 2 years now.
It's been it's been out since October 2004.
But that's okay. You got impressed, which is cool.
Hey, any kind of a mention is good, you know.
Now, you know, see, this is what he did. He got incensed that. Penguin TV said, unreliable bash scripts. And then in his interview, they printed, Link did not found the, found the other utilities unreliable. It was like almost an exact paraphrase as to what Penguin TV guy found disturbing about some of the bash script ones, which I think was Link's. Damn you, Link.
Yeah, of course.
The Perl programmers are massing together.
They're banging on his front door. Let us in. We're going to get you.
It was brought up on the chat that they thought, if you read my blog, that after everything was running perfectly on my dad's system, I decided to put it one of those plates on the back. Where the slots
well, it was
are.
On, right, Dan?
Yeah, while it was on, I dropped the screw
never learned,
on the motherboard, and all of a sudden it just went, and then the speaker won't go off anymore, and I'm getting errors when I try and turn it on. So I had to pull everything out and put it in another system. That'll learn you. That will learn you. Don't work on a live system.
Dan is a bad man.
Dan, we're going down the highway at 80. Let's do an oil change.
Wait,
I'm going to tune up over doing 75.
Let's replace the engine. Now, you know, here's a good question. When you guys work on computers, do you use static risk, static strap?
This time of the year, you just touch a piece of metal to ground yourself.
Do you guys use, because they're always saying,
no way.
You should use a wrist, one of those static
nobody
wrist
uses those
straps.
Things, man. You look so freaking gay with them.
Work on it.
You know my favorite way to discharge.
You're pulling the memory out. You're lucky you don't break that little clip off on the motherboard,
which I
did. You go over
to a light switch and you touch one of the little screws.
What I usually do is I pet my cat as I am sticking my hand in the system to pull the processor out. I'm sitting there stroking my cat. Because you stroke the cat a few times, and then you touch him on the nose, and it's like...
I get my two-year-old son. He's got one of those really thick pajamas with the little feet on, and you just go like near him, and your hair stands up on your arm.
You know what? I'll tell you this. I got to give Apple credit for something, because when I took that laptop apart, and at one point when I was trying to mess around with it, sparks flew.
Oh, Jesus.
But the thing still works. And I don't know, I should have probably pulled the battery on there and made sure it wasn't plugged in, but, you know, haste makes waste. And nothing's more wasteful than static electricity.
Well, it's probably not a good idea to play with, like, you know, a CPU or some memory chips. After vacuuming your carpet, you know, or touching yeah. the TV.
You're in socks on your carpet sliding around the room. Let's take the memory chip out. Let's put a CD in and spin the computer around as it's trying to read the CD. Those are always good things. Right, Link? Link?
Link died.
He's dead.
Right.
How's your...
You know, we got a horrible lag on this tonight.
Yeah, I think that's my fault. It'll be solved in about a minute.
Oh, man, he's downloading stuff to install a new kernel while we're doing the show again, right?
No, what Dan's going to do is the asterisk box, he's upgrading all the packages as we speak.
Yeah, what is it? CentOS, right?
Yeah, you're just upgrading everything at once right now.
Yeah. And I did a dist upgrade on the system that's recording the show. Hey, you cool. know, speaking of the show recordings... Lincoln posted a BitTorrent of, I guess, a zip file of all the shows, right, Link?
Yes. All the shows for last week, 114.
Right. And, I did a high...
They sound awesome, the high bit one, 128.
The 128, I did two of those for about 111 megabytes a piece. What's the thoughts on those?
I thought they sounded great, man, especially the MP3. Big difference in quality.
Okay.
I thought they were really good sounding too, yeah.
The AUG was marginally better than the 32 kilobit one. I mean, it was better, but it wasn't as noticeable as the MP3 file.
So we obviously can't, like, I can get the 128 bit. I can get that encoded, you know, after I do all the other ones. The downside of that is uploading that somewhere. Where are we going to upload it to?
Well, my suggestion is we get about 20 people who volunteer from our listeners, people who want to host the file and do the BitTorrent as one of the seeders. We have 20 people. We have them download the file first, and then we announce that the BitTorrent is available. And then people can hit the BitTorrents as much as they want. So, I mean, that's what, like, other shows have to do. I know the Lug Radio guys do something similar with their people. They'll have, like, a group of quote-unquote mirrors that do it, that, you know, give bandwidth. And I think if we do something similar to that, you know, even if we get 10 people to do it, and we leave it up for a week or 2 weeks at a time, and then we do the next show. What do you think?
Where are we going to put it up? On our server?
Initially, to the first 20 people get it.
Well, see, here's the thing. If we do that, we need to put it up on our server so other people can get it. And then if and when they get it, somebody else would have to start hosting the BitTorrent. We'd have to create a new torrent file for it so that it's hosted from someone else's server instead of from ours. Otherwise, the original BitTorrent still points back to our server.
Right.
What I was thinking was we could put, we can just set aside the, whatever, 200 megs of space or whatever on our server, and then just rotate the files out on a week-by-week basis. Do a BitTorrent for those two files, and hopefully our listeners will participate in that so that we don't incur all the bandwidth costs for that. And the next week, you know, we just replace those two files and make a new torrent.
So I guess what to really progress, we need 20 volunteers. People who are willing to live, you know, the BitTorrent up 24 hours a day for 2 weeks. I'm willing to join in. I'll do, you know, my part.
Pat's going to host it, provide the BitTorrent, and pay you to seed it.
No.
For every megabyte you,
dude,
you seed,
I don't want to fry my
cable. Download it.
I don't want to fry.
Pat'll give you $10.
My cable modem, man.
Yeah.
I don't want to walk in the morning and like my cable modem is like melted. You know, it's smoke rising off of it.
So, do you want me to encode a 128? Now, do we want to do both MP3 and AUG? No?
I'm open to it either.
Not a clue, guys.
Not a clue what?
I think, you know, maybe we ought to just do a nice 128-bit MP3 file once a week and stick it up there. Run a BitTorrent on it, and then at the next week, overwrite it and do it with the next week's stuff.
Yep. I think that's the way to go.
Yeah, but do we do MP3 or AUG?
Well, my opinion is the AUG.
Ask the listeners.
Yeah, we can ask the listeners. What do they want? My opinion is the 128...
Want MP3 files or AUG files?
The 128-bit...
DVD audio.
MP3
Wave files.
Way better than the 32-bit one. The AUG, it's better, but not as noticeable. I think we should just do the MP3 for now.
So we got the MP3. We got the AUG. We got the MP3 that's the same as the AUG. Then we're going to have the 128 AUG and the 128 MP3. That's five files for each show.
We should cut that down. We should get rid of that raw MP3, Dan. They should just download the AUG file. Just go with the AUG file for the extra content. That was the whole point of it, wasn't it?
Yeah, kind of, but then, you know...
Get rid of everything else but the damn AUG file.
Now we got to have some MP3.
Oh, can you imagine that?
You ought to be able to listen to an AUG file, you know?
Can you imagine that? What would all those people using iTunes do?
We got to have an MP3.
They'd have to buy an iRiver or something.
Questions, no answers. So we dropped the raw MP3. Leave that as the AUG, and we do an MP3, an AUG, and then...
High quality MP3.
High quality or MP3. AUG. Or and or both.
I think just one. We should go for the high quality.
Huh.
When do you guys need to post this on the forum with it?
Poll?
Yeah, poll.
Let's do a poll. Shall I start it? I could do it right now.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'll do it right now.
I'm too tired to do it. I got the AIDS again.
Got the HIV?
The HIV. HIV.
There you go. Look at what Kent just said on IRC. He said low bitrate AUG with the extra content and the high bitrate MP3. Sounds good to me.
No, wait. That's all we do? A low bitrate AUG?
Yeah.
And then a high, and no regular bitrate MP3?
I don't know. Like I said, poll it. Put a poll up on a forum, and we'll find out what people
are saying.
Well, you know what? I don't think we're going to drop the regular MP3. That would be stupid. That would just piss too many people off. I think the AUG is going to stay, the MP3, and we'll either do high bitrate AUG and an MP3 or just a high bitrate AUG. I don't know. We'll see. We'll let the listeners decide whether they want one, the other, or both.
Yeah, let the listeners decide.
Yeah, and then everybody should go out and get either an iAudio, an iRiver, or a GXP2.
The Neuros also does AUG.
Or Neuros. Or, you know, you could just hook your laptop up and play it through your laptop in the car.
Sounds great, actually, playing the audio files through the laptop.
Yeah. All right, that works for me, that works for you, that works for everybody. You know, I don't know if I brought this. Did I bring this?
We have resolved to do absolutely nothing at this point, right?
Right. Let the listeners decide. Did we talk about a couple weeks? No, I think I was talking to Mark. This was probably at the LUG meeting. That I know this is kind of old news, but there's that TiVo to go service that you can do, which will download the TiVo, your TiVo
video.
Content video to your machine. It only works under Windows, and I think they're producing a Mac client, but there's nothing about having a Linux client, which I think is kind of obscene, since the damn TiVo runs on Linux. Why can't they produce a Linux client? That just sucks. Which then elicited the response that...
Not enough people have bitched about it.
Exactly.
Which then elicited the response that when we were talking about this was, wonder if TiVo is violating the GPL at all.
Oh, sounds like our guest was popping.
I wonder. I don't know. Pat's violating the GPL as we speak.
Am I?
Hello.
How you doing today?
Hey, Joe.
Can you hear us okay?
Good. How are you?
Very good.
Excellent.
I can hear you okay. Can you hear me?
Well, huh? You're coming through perfect.
Good.
Oh,
just fine.
Let's want to get the interview going here?
Go ahead, Pat. You kick us off.
We got Joe Bourne from...
I'm just fuming over here about the TiVo to go.
From Norris Audio. Welcome, Joe.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, Joe... what are you? You're the CEO, founder of Norris Audio?
I am. You're breaking up a little bit now. I'm hearing a little bit of an echo. Is there anything I can do about that?
No, I think we're just eating up our bandwidth.
Yeah, let me see if I can fix that up a little bit.
Okay, all right.
Hold on. Okay, hopefully it'll be a little bit better. Probably not.
Okay.
So, Joe, I guess one of the big things about Norris Audio is you guys have opened up your firmware. You made it open firmware so that people from the community can contribute to it. Is that correct?
That's right. I mean, we have various stages of openness on the various products that we have. In many cases, it's a process for us to get it open. I mean, these products are products themselves are the product of, you know, a lot of different partners, and so, you know, there's a number of sign-offs, and it's not always immediate that our products are open, but they're all at various stages of being opened if they're not open already.
And I guess, what was the main reason for opening up the firmware? Was it to increase the quality of the software?
Absolutely, it's both you know, direct participation in the software, as well as bug fixing, as well as just a huge amount of experimentation, just speed and development that we couldn't get you know, through the conventional closed methods. I mean, we've seen, you know, for example, on our original Neuros MP3 player, we saw, you know, four different versions of synchronization software using four different languages. Four entirely different approaches, and so you could watch users, not just create these pieces of software, but interact with them and fix them, you know, and it just gave us insight that we never would have been able to get, you know, just with the conventional internal development process.
Now, the Norris, one of the things that stood out about Norris, the audio players to me, was the fact that you support OGG files. How far along did you make this decision, and what kind of feedback have you gotten back over that decision?
Well, there was just, you know, we had taken kind of an open position early on, and so that attracted that contingency of users, you know, and the open source advocates and you know, the folks who are really following this, so there was, you know, a pretty strong and immediate outcry for OGG pretty early on. And then the rest of it was really just, you know, the process of getting it done. We actually worked with Ziff, and Monty himself ported their embedded AUG codec to the Neuros, and you know, it took us some period of time to get it up and debugged and all that, but it was pretty obvious early on that we needed that, and we clearly are going to need to implement that on all the products that we ship. It's a key important factor for our user base, and it's becoming more and more ubiquitous as well. You know, portal players supporting a portal player, but a lot of the chipsets are supporting it directly. So it's becoming more and more ubiquitous.
Well, what are some of the other codecs that you support?
Well, they're various products, and they support different codecs on each one of them. But in general, AUG is a key one. FLAC is one that we've gotten a lot of interest for, both on the playback side and ideally on the encoding side. We can support it. Less so actually. I haven't heard much about speech just not a lot of people use these players for voice codecs generally, from what I can tell. And there's actually a certain amount of, our user base is not, totally unlike the others in that they're interested in at least having the option to support some of the WMA stuff as well. So that's in the mix and certainly on the wish list. But it caused us a lot of trouble on the DRM side with, open source firmware and running on Linux. It's not always easy not all this stuff mixes beautifully. Sometimes it's like oil and water, so we struggle with that sometimes.
Now, let me ask you, what kind of pressures have you felt regarding DRM from the recording industry or anybody else for that matter?
Well, I think it's just, I think we'll see. I mean, we actually haven't gotten a huge amount of it yet from anyone. I mean, I'm expecting that, there may well be letters, forthcoming. We've taken a pretty strong and public stand on not just open source, but on digital rights, and protecting users' rights to reuse the content in multiple different formats without having to pay for it. And every time they buy a new device, they want a new format. So, we've been pretty vocal about that, and we'll see. I mean, just recently, you saw there was some analog hold legislation just introduced to Congress, which is pretty scary stuff. So there's definitely multiple threatening forces. As far as us, personally, we haven't received a lot of pressure yet, but we'll see. We'll see how that works out.
Which products has been your biggest seller? Has it been the audio player?
The audio player, well, historically, that was the longest one, the biggest historical sales. But currently, we've had a great deal of success with this recorder product, which is that digital VCR for handhelds and most directly the PSP. That's been a big hit this Christmas. So that's actually our biggest seller right now.
And how much does that sell for, that MPEG-4 recorder?
I'm sorry?
How much does the MPEG-4 recorder sell for?
Who's in this at all?
The MPEG-4 recorder, the MSRP is $149. And you can find it online for less in certain places.
So that's pretty reasonable.
Yeah, it is reasonable, considering what it does, and that you don't have to buy UMD discs, or you don't have to buy iTunes Music Store downloads at $2 a piece, and obviously it's everything you can transfer everything that you could buy on DVD or watch on cable or get from any other source. So it's basically a limitless catalog, and you can reuse the media that you already have. So it's a device that really does kind of exert your fair use rights, your digital rights, whatever you want to call them, and you know, you pay once for the device, and it enables that.
And your newest product is what, the 442 digital media player recorder?
Yeah, the other player, the personal media player, is the 442, and that has some of the same attributes. I mean, one of the key elements of it is, again, recording from any analog source. So, you know, many users, you know, it's clearly been something that's stymied the industry, and Apple has you know, partially rectified that. And really, you know, the downloads that Apple's giving are great to the extent that they're option value for users. I mean, it's great to be able to download shows that, you know, you might have missed or forgot to TiVo or whatever it is. As an option, it's terrific, but, you know, the trouble with it is that, you know, steadily our digital rights are starting to erode, and instead of becoming an extra option that we have, it's replacing the old, you know, the other alternatives. And so, you know, the 442 is another device that allows you to actually record from analog sources and has many of the same attributes as the recorder product. And we think that that's, you know, one important source of content for personal media players.
I'm looking at the webpage for the Neuros 442. I gotta say, you're pretty darn brave putting on that tagline, mm-hmm. Record, view, and share digital media whenever, wherever. That's just gotta be a big sign there that says, come get us.
Got a nice target on your back.
Yeah.
Well, it's really not intended for that, and our position is really very strictly, you know, fair use stuff. I mean, there's nothing that we do that actively in any way is trying to support piracy, but we are, you know, very vocal advocates for the digital rights stuff. I mean, it is perfectly legal and perfectly within, you know, your fair use rights that have existed practically since, you know, establishment of the copyrights that, you know, themselves, that you have the right to reuse content in certain ways. So, you know, so it's not at all, and you'll see as you delve around the website, I mean, we're not, even at the community level or anything, there's you know, no advocacy of piracy and really no tolerance of any kind of, you know, active discussion of that. This isn't, this isn't a place where you find the latest BitTorrent streams or anything like that. But it is about, you know, about reusing media and about fair use rights, and we've tried to, you know, be pretty clear on both sides of that. It's not a pirate site, but it is one that advocates users' consumer rights.
Now you're moving the 442 over to open source, and one question I have for you is, what? How easy is it for somebody that's using Linux to be able to get content to and from any of your devices? Is it, you know, pretty much OS agnostic, or are you guys more supporting Windows, OS 10?
No, we've made a great effort for the devices to be not just open source, but open. So even the ones that we, you know, haven't been able to release the source code to, and that, you know, generally is the earlier stages of development, there's you know, none of the devices have been OS specific. So, you know, for example, all of them use, you know, mass storage cache, so you can plug them into any device, any PC rather, and it'll be recognized as an external hard drive. And you can drag and drop files to it. In certain cases, we've used PC software to create databases and so on and so forth. But the protocols for those have always been open, so that, you know, that's why there were four different sync managers for us, so, you know, they could run on Linux or Mac systems, and it wasn't, you know, locked down. And that's another area where, you know, the DRM thing is really the bane of a lot of these players' existence, because you see mass storage class, you know, threatened by a lot of the DRM schemes. And we just, you know, there are various philosophies on it. Our philosophy in general is that we want to enable consumers to do, you know, what they want and have more options with it. And if they want to be able to download DRM, trouble again is that, you know, in, you know, 9 times out of 10, you end up limiting some other functionality as a result of implementing that. But to answer your question, we've made the device as agnostic as we can. We've used all the, you know, either protocols we've created them ourselves, or, you know, tried to use standards in every case that we could.
Now, I don't think you answered this question, but if you did, I apologize. Will the Neuros products play DRM music? Because I know if you go out to some of these audio services as music download sites, you can buy a something for 99 cents, but it has DRM. It's DRM protected, and you can't really play it all the time on a Linux machine. But will your device play it?
If we can do it without compromising the other aspects of the design, we will. You know, our position, again, has always been that we want to give consumers as many possible options as they can. You know, and we had an agreement with Microsoft on the original Neuros, but, you know, but it's been, you know, it's been not easy to implement, you know, DRM without losing some, you know, some important aspects of the device. You know, and again, you know, one of the most beloved is the mass storage class. We can plug it in and use the device as an external hard drive. And you see that, you know, most of the devices incorporate DRM, you know, can't do that. Digital audio output, the SPDIF outputs, you know, there's been rumbling that's threatened by, you know, by the DRM agreements that, you know, you put in place. So whether or not we implement it, we really have to see. It really determines on what we can negotiate as far as keeping the remainder of our device open.
Now, when you go to watch, again, let's talk about the Neuros 442. When you want to get video on there, does it just pull it from the S-Video? Not S-Video. The video and audio AV jacks out of the computer? Is it S-Video, or how do you actually get the video content onto this device?
Well, all the current series of devices just use the RCA, the composite video jacks. You know, for a couple reasons. I mean, those are the most the most ubiquitous. The devices record, you know, at VGA resolution, so it's really good. Broadcast TV are better than that resolution, but it's not, you know, HD TV. And then you know, then there's all the Digital Millennium Copyright Act stuff that comes into place on the direct, you know, the direct digital interfaces. So, you know, we really are, for untethered and unfettered recording, we're limited to the analog side of it. So we use the RCA because, you know, it's the most ubiquitous and it's appropriate for the kind of level of encoding that we do.
Now, will that play? I'm looking on the site. I'm not seeing what formats. Will that play? Like, can I download some content from, like, CNN's website and throw it on this device and be able to watch it as I'm going into work if I was on the train or the bus? Will that play like Windows Media Files, QuickTime?
Which format?
Windows Media or QuickTime?
It plays, you know, the video stuff is, you know, there's no central MP3 that's, you know, that's ubiquitous and standard, really. I mean, the MPEG, you know, 4 standard has, you know, so many variants of, you know, wrappers and audio codecs and that. So it plays, the current 442 plays Windows Media, the standard profile. We're working on expanding that list of codecs. It plays the QuickTime.mp4 files. It plays DivX. It plays many of the XVID files. And what am I forgetting here? It plays quite a number, but not all. We're actively expanding the codecs that it supports.
So you got a really powerful, versatile device here that, probably your biggest competition is the iPod. And has it been hard to kind of, keep up? Not so much keep up with the iPod, because you surpass it with features, but the hype behind the iPod, the marketing machine, is it really hard to come up with, some type of marketing or some way to sell your product that's, I think, superior to the iPod? Is that difficult to do? Difficult competition?
Well, I think it gets difficult if you're trying to go, head to head with Apple, and you're trying to, really significantly directly compete, and you're looking at market shares. I mean, you've seen companies like Creative that really get crushed when they're essentially declaring war on Apple in their words. But we operate in really a little bit of a tangential area. Our consumer base is somewhat different than iPod, although they're certainly. We're competing with them to some extent, and certainly some of our users have both products. But iPod is very mainstream, and they've done everything to pare down the functionality of the device just so that it would be extremely simple to use. And so that leaves a lot of people with basic requirements in need of a different product. As you guys know, it's just. The iPod does what it does very well, but it's a fairly limited device. If you want to go anywhere outside that, even from recording to a host of other things that the Neuros does, you have to go to some other device. I don't know, Tom. I mean, we're really targeting a very involved, educated segment of the consumer base that's looking for something different. So, I don't think it's, there's certainly, you have to be at parity with the competition, and there's a number of things that Apple's done extremely well, particularly on a design front, and some of the ease of use and the simplicity and the seamless integration, which are things that, you learn from, and we get stronger by a stronger competitive environment. But, no, we're not, I wouldn't say we're competing directly. You can see, that the Neuros follows a very, kind of specific requirements of what they're looking for. And, there's a great many areas of the market that just aren't addressed by the iPod, for a host of reasons, many of which are very conscious choices on the part of Steve Jobs.
Let me ask you, Joe, how do you get a company started like this, offering electronics in a consumer market? I mean, you got to go out and get venture capital. Are you, what's your background? Are you an engineer?
Well, actually, Neuros is a spinoff of a company called Digital Innovations, which is still around. And Digital Innovations is a consumer electronics accessory company. And actually, I started Digital Innovations in 95, making a product that's still around called the Skip Doctor, which is a CD and DVD repair device. And that's sold at, Best Buy and CompUSA, Circuit City, Walmart, and everywhere that you can buy consumer electronics and pre-recorded music. So that's really how we got started. We never did it with venture capital. It's actually a very much bootstrapped organization with, some friends and family money and... a lot of bank financing for the inventory and receivables. But really just grew it bit by bit and year by year. And that's a company that's distributed in 30,000 outlets. And basically what happened in 2001, we said, we'd like to get in the digital audio space. It was actually before the iPod had launched, and we saw a big opportunity in digital audio. And, really things hadn't been done well by that point. I mean, it was receiving a lot of hype, but those first players were really pretty basic. There weren't any, you know, databases you couldn't easily browse. The synchronization with the PC was very weak. There was a host of things they weren't doing. And most of all, they weren't at all interactive. We had created a bunch of features, you know, with the two-way sync system and, you know, song identification feature, maybe FM broadcasting that we felt really addressed some consumer needs. So we, you know, we created the Neuros product. And then in December of 2003, we spun it off into its own company. And we've been a freestanding company since then. And, you know, basically we, you know, finance ourselves just through positive cash flow primarily. We brought in some small investment, but we're not, even today, we're not a venture capital-backed company.
So I guess most of your manufacturers are in the Far East, right? Like places like Malaysia, China.
Yeah, actually we do, almost all the manufacturing is done in China, and we also do a considerable amount of the R&D and the engineering work in our China division. We have a China division in the south of China, the Hong Kong area, that has, it's our office with some of our own employees, managed by a fellow who worked at Neuros in the U.S. for many years, but Chinese national himself.
It's a tough market. I mean, what you're trying to do is hugely challenging, but you know, it's awesome that you guys are, you know, trying to do this. You know, I really respect what you're trying to do. It's an uphill battle, really.
Well, it's a brutally competitive market, and again, if you really just target the mainstream, then it's really brutally tough. But, you know, we think we have a very kind of significant, unique niche in the market. We think there is a very significant base of, you know, open source from developers to, you know, what we call open source followers, you know, people who care and value about the open source stuff. And it's really quite a lot of fun to take, you know, a different approach than anyone else has taken in the market. I mean, it's neat to watch a community develop. It's neat to watch, you know, all the interactivity. And you know, the power of the open source movement, as you guys well know, is really significant. I mean, this wasn't a part of the, you know, the business plan at inception. It was only as we started to open up and we're really just kind of blown away by the community's involvement and developments that, you know, that we really caught on to how significant this was. You know, there's a posting I love on Slashdot that one of the users said about us competing with Apple. He said, you know, it's like you have the best high school team that you know, you've seen, and you show up for football, and you're facing the New England Patriots. And he said, you know, you turn around and you decide that you're going to hand, you know, the open source strategy is essentially looking around and deciding that you're going to hand axe handles to the entire audience in the stands and, you know, and say, go at it, fellas. So, you know, so it's been fun in that respect, and we'll see. I think it's, you know, I think there's, you know, the open source movement, as Eric Raymond's fond of saying, isn't like sprinkling pixie dust, but, you know, but it is, you know, a pretty powerful thing, and I think we'll just have to see how it develops. You know, there's, you know, a lot of things happen that can't, you know, without giving individuals the levers to operate, you know, your machine.
Let me ask you, what are you running on the embedded devices? Is it a custom built operating system?
Well, all the new stuff, the platform that we're doing is a dual core TI processor that has an ARM on one side and a DSP on the other. And all the open source stuff, the architecture is going to be Linux, 2.6 kernel. It's, you know, it's not a embedded Linux anymore per se. And then it runs. The video codecs run in the DSP, and so there's an API that links the two. But basically, from a developer perspective, it's all the stuff is written basically at the application level on top of Linux.
I mean, I've gone to the forums, the Norse forums, and it seems like you've got quite the community going over there. Everyone seems to be really into it.
Has there been any...
Yeah, I mean, the community's been extremely important, even at the Belt.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say the community's been extremely important even at the development stage. There's been lots of, interactivity, and you'll see now that, you know, as we develop the hardware, you know, there's all kind of insight. We've invited the Rockbox guys, for their feedback. They've been working with manufacturers, on open source firmware that's been unsupported by factories, but, lots of, what have they learned? And so even, at the development stage of the products, conception, it's been a very, very helpful to get that kind of feedback. It's the kind of stuff you couldn't get any other way. You can't get it out of focus groups or conventional market research. So it's been very important to us.
What have been some of the negative aspects or the challenge or the hurdles? I maybe don't want to call them negative aspects, but some of the hurdles in switching or moving to an open system. I mean, there's a lot of good, but what are some of the negative?
Well, I don't know negatives, but there's certainly a lot of challenges. I mean, like I said, we work with an infrastructure that, that is a, multi-layered supply chain. I mean, we get parts from TI, and TI is, only somewhat reluctantly supportive of a lot of the open source stuff. TI is a very proprietary company with a lot of, a lot of proprietary stuff and a lot of secret technology that they protect with a variety of means. So, so that's been a challenge. I mean, getting information that we can share with them on our hardware designs isn't always easy. Negotiating, there's an intermediate IP provider that, that also bases their entire, business model on proprietary software. So, so we had to come up with agreements that would protect their IP. Many of the manufacturers themselves that we work with are leery about releasing, a lot of their IP. And, there's always, concerns, among, your various constituents that, you're releasing all your software, to the public. What will you protect? What's going to be your value? I guess by and large, we were surprised in how supportive the investment community is today, towards open source. I mean, we haven't actually raised venture capital money. As I said, we have done a certain amount of investigation of it and talking with people, and I've been very pleasantly surprised on the other side of the coin how supportive the VC community seems to be about open source today. So, but to answer your question, I mean, there certainly are a lot of parties that, that there's considerable negotiation with, and, they're scared of, losing IP at various levels. They're scared of commoditizing products. So there's a lot of, there's a lot of work involved in making a piece of hardware open today. You wouldn't think so. You'd think there's a lot of people who just want to sell hardware, but, it's not like the PC business. There's not broad agreement on standards on many aspects of embedded systems. So there's a lot of work and negotiation involved in that.
All right. Your device for recording movies, encoding it for PSP use. That sounds pretty interesting. Has there been a pretty big demand for that?
Yeah, there's been a huge demand. We've had a lot of trouble keeping it in stock. We launched just recently, but But yeah, there's been quite a big demand for that. And I think it stems from a few reasons. I mean, first of all, that device also is useful for, it creates, it's their MPEG-4 files with AAC audio, so they also play directly with no conversion needed on the new iPod as well. So I think there's been some demand from that crowd. But, you know, the reason we designed it, and clearly what's been driving a lot of it, is because it recognizes that video is different than audio. The way you listen to it and consume it is different. And, you know, in many cases, you know, you're willing to put in, you know, some effort into ripping a CD because you're going to listen to it over and over again. But, you know, so often with a video, a lot of the content is really very disposable. So, you know, even the threshold of, you know, spending 20 minutes on a download or you know, converting files, you know, it's hard to justify if you're just going to watch a show one time. So we created the recorder, the MPEG recorder, with the vision that it'd be essentially a digital VCR for handhelds. You'd set it up, you'd program it, and it'd be, you know, you just pop out the flash memory, and you'd watch it or not that day. So, you know, it's convenient and fast enough that, you know, there's no file conversion, there's no PC. You could grab that, the memory stick or CF or the SD card and the various models, and, you know, pop it in your 442 or your PSP on the way out the door, and you could watch, you know, ESPN or CNN or the Sopranos or whatever on your commute. And it has to be really easy and automatic to justify that kind of everyday use.
Well, let me ask you, Joe, what are the challenges of getting your products into the big chain retailers? You know, the Best Buys, the Circuit Cities. How difficult has it been to try to get your product in their stores?
Well, we have, you know, through DI and a lot of our relationships, we have broad relationships with retail. So, you know, our approach to retail has been to market our products to consumers and then to bring them to the channels where they shop. One of the biggest challenges with retail, quite frankly, is financing the whole operation, because, you know, you have big working capital requirements with retailers. There's long, slow payment terms. Delivery requirements that dictate you have to have high inventory levels. And, you know, in a consumer electronics space where your margins are relatively slim, there's not a lot of room for error with those kind of things. So, you know, so financing that situation is frankly one of the biggest challenges.
Joe, do you have any new products coming up in the next year or so that we should keep a lookout for?
Basically, new versions of the kind of stuff that you see on there. We have new versions of the recorder products coming out in the middle of next year that will have Ethernet capability and enhancing on some of the functionality that the other ones have. Recorder products with hard drives coming out. Like I said, networking capabilities. The open source version of the 442 is coming out. That'll have some additional capabilities. But it's really just enhancements and driving more of those same products that you have. And then, of course, we're working on the third generation of the Neuros, the digital audio computer, as we call it, the one that's the audio-focused product. And we're hoping to have that out by the second half of 06. We'll see. So those are really our big ones. The same basic categories, but enhancing them. The features and functionality that they already have.
Now, your devices support Ogg Vorbis playback. Do they support Theora format yet?
Not yet. We're working on it.
Now, a lot of devices that say they support Ogg have in the past only supported a certain bitrate, and some of the comments that we've heard from manufacturers is saying that it takes a heck of a lot more processing power to decode an Ogg file and play it back than it does like an MP3. Is that true? Are you aware of that? Or is that just...
Well, We had, I mean, we've always had some fairly stout processors on the Neuros, but I know that Monty spent a lot of time optimizing the code. You can get to level 6 OGG files and stuff, and I know there was considerable amount of work optimizing that and getting people to where those would play, you know, without any problems at the high bit rates. You know, I mean, OGG is a next generation, you know, codec. It has considerably more compression than MP3, so there's a trade-off there. It's got to come from somewhere. I mean, you know, the fact that it's a more sophisticated, compression algorithm, you know, tells you that it's going to be more than likely a little more processor intensive on the back end. So, you know, we built that in, but, you know, one of the reasons that there's considerable debate, you know, how important is video relative to audio, you know, in the Neuros world, but, you know, one of the things that you know, really, you know, we like is, as the video stuff gets more ubiquitous, you can afford to have higher horsepower processors. So, you know, the TI processors that we're using on these next generation of products is the dual core processor with a 200 megahertz ARM 9 on the ARM side of it. So, you know, it's plenty to do, you know, any kind of audio signal processing that you want to do. You know, forget about decoding. That's no problem. But, you know, simultaneous encoding and decoding. So you've got TiVo for radio. All those kind of things are enabled with the kind of processors that can support video. You know, video is obviously just a lot more processor intensive than audio, so it gives you a lot of flexibility. But to answer your question, yeah, I mean, OGG was more processor intensive, I guess, than MP3 from my high level experience. Monty might tell you different. I know there was some optimization in getting it to work up to the high bit rates.
What, speaking specifically about the 442, is there a battery in that, or does it take, I don't know, I don't think it takes double A's. What's the battery like?
Well, it's got an internal lithium battery. It's optimized for video. It's got over 5 hour battery life. On the video side, and over 10 hours on just playing audio. It's got an internal that the battery on that is obviously rechargeable. It's a lithium-ion battery.
Is it easy to remove the battery should the battery stop functioning?
That one is not, user replaceable, unfortunately. It's not a separate battery pack. Neuros has a battery replacement policy that actually hasn't been set on the 442. We've always tried to be very accommodating on that. On the Neuros product, I think it's $12.95 to replace the battery when it gets old. So, it's not a profit center for us. I mean, we're just actively trying to support our consumers. But I don't know what it'll be on the 442, but something comparable to that. We try and make it very... very affordable for users if their battery does get old.
Now, I don't understand why you guys aren't charging like $80-$90 bucks to replace the battery on that thing like some other companies.
Because they're not Apple.
I wasn't trying to name names.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's pretty important for a company that's targeting such an involved and loyal consumer base not to alienate them. And, you know, we really try and be as fair as we can. Try and be as open as we can with adopting standards, letting third parties, their accessories work with ours. I mean, we've worked so that you could use a Dell charger on the 442, so that, it's easy for you to find it. And the more we can do in using kind of standard stuff and not gouging consumers for accessories or allowing them to use third party stuff and keeping things open, it helps to build that community rather than destroy it. And we're aggressively trying to build that, not alienate people. And, hopefully some of the folks who've been alienated by some of the other consumer electronics manufacturers with their lockdown proprietary standards are going to come to Neuros.
Yeah, my hat's off to you. That's great. I mean, that the opening up the format, $12 to replace the battery. What more could you ask for, Pat?
Sounds like a sweet deal. I was actually considering getting the Neuros when I was looking for an audio player, and I didn't at the time because I didn't have the money, you know, to shell out. I wound up getting a cheaper player. You know, if I had the cash, I probably would have got it.
Well, you know, there's lots of, you know, there's different things for different people. Like I said, I mean, we have community members who have iPods as well, and that, you know, it's a great player, and there's, you know, there's really nothing wrong with it. So, you know, there's different strokes for different folks, and if it, you know, if it meets your needs and, you know, you're interested in the customization, you know, we'd love to have you as a part of the community or any, you know, any folks. But, you know, it's not a religious thing. I mean, you know, you know, we're trying to make the best consumer electronics product we have for our consumers, and, you know, we hope it serves them well, and, you know, there's different strokes for different folks. It won't be for everybody, but we hope it's, you know, we hope it satisfies those that it is starting towards.
Got some good stuff there. Good stuff, and definitely, you know, I hope our listeners do give you a serious look, because it's nice to see a company working with the community and producing a fantastic product and to have the values that your company does.
Well, thanks. We appreciate it. And, thanks for having me on tonight. And make sure you give everybody our website so they can come see what we're doing and what we stand for. And hopefully we'll, you know, sell a few product and attract a few community members.
Joe, thanks for coming on. We really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. And we'll definitely look at your products in the future. We'll keep an eye out for it.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Take care.
And that's neurosaudio.com, NEUROSAUDIO.com.
Thanks very much, guys.
Thank you very much for coming on. Have a happy holiday.
Happy
holiday. That was a little too late on that.
Yeah, it's okay. That was cool.
That's just, you know what? I look at this and I'm like, if only it played games.
Yeah.
I'd be like, oh, the GPX 2 or this?
Now, the GPX 2, who manufactures that? Is it? Which company is that?
Game Park Holding is a Korean company.
Not for nothing, man. A lot of the Korean companies are putting out some really good stuff.
Right.
iAudio is Korean.
This Neuros, man, wow.
I was actually considering getting one, and it was a little out of my price range, you know, when it was time to get one. You know, if I had the money, I probably would have got it.
What is that?
I think that's your sound card. You hear that on other podcasts sometimes. That little buzzing.
Link, you come back on now. What?
I'm on.
Oh. That's what it was. It was him.
No, no. I've heard that on.
No, I've been on the whole time. I've just been quiet.
What do you think there, boss man? Little man.
I think that's some really cool stuff, actually. And I've been sitting here trying to talk myself out of buying the MPEG-4 recorder.
That's not bad, $150, man.
That's really... Well, see, there are two of them there. There's a MPEG-4 recorder version 1 and version 2, and I guess the version 2 actually does formats for PSPs as well.
Right. Well, is the MPEG recorder 4 recorder 2 geared towards the PSP? Will the content work outside of the PSP?
Yeah, it'll do everything plus the PSP format.
Hmm. Yeah. Well,
tell you what, it's a damn nifty little thing.
That is true.
It's cool.
But is that a quarter they have right next to it, right? So it's like, it's about the size.
I think so, yeah.
Looks like about the size of a pack of smokes there, huh?
It is pretty small.
Yep.
But thinner. It's like the size of a pack of Philly Blunts.
Philly Blunts.
Yeah.
What's on your mind, Dan?
SD cards. SD cards. How much do they go for? They've come down in price, haven't they?
Yeah, I think they have.
I think I need to get one of those, too.
So what are you going to do for an audio play? You're going to use your new toy?
Yeah, it plays all the formats. Yeah, AUG,
how
MP3.
How big's the hard drive?
It takes removable media.
So, like what?
SD cards.
Smart media, SanDisk, that kind of thing?
Yeah. Flash. SD card. No. The SD flash. This is the small, thin ones, I believe. Is that right? SD's the small, thin ones?
I used
to use compact flash. Yeah. But it's like kind of like wafer thin type thing.
There's only a wafer thin mint.
Wafer thin mint. So I figure if I can get a couple, I get one for games, one for my porn, and one for audio. And then I can switch them out. Yeah. Then I could burn all the DVDs I steal from Blockbuster, right? Yeah, because that's the way it goes. As I buy pirated DVDs, burn them, and turn around and resell them again on eBay. Isn't that the way it should be?
Man, eBay's a hoot, man.
Do you buy stuff off of eBay?
Sometimes, yeah. For the most part, I've had good luck with it. The only time I had something crappy was I bought an acoustic pickup for an acoustic guitar, and it was supposed to have a jack connected to it, and it looked like the jack was cut off with a pair of scissors. not a huge deal. I mean, I paid like $25 for the damn thing, and I wound up buying a jack and just soldering a new jack onto it for another $5. But that's the only time I've ever been burned on eBay. You know, you hear different people saying different things, so I'm sure everybody's got a eBay horror story to tell.
I've only bought one thing off of eBay, and it went really smooth, and I was really happy with it.
I
bought some stuff off eBay, it's
okay.
Been pretty good every time.
My Myth TV box, I bought the motherboard, the CPU, off of eBay. Paid $20 for the motherboard. That was a good deal.
I paid like, I think it was $200 for that chassis for the Gateway laptop, which included everything but the hard drive, CPU, and sound card. And battery. So it wasn't too bad.
This lady I work with, she sold a laptop on there, and the guy who won the bidding was from Egypt, I think. And the guy hasn't gotten back to her whether or not, you know, he wants to send her money. He's like, he sent her an email saying, you know, send me the laptop, blah, 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 blah. And she's like, well, you got to pay me first. And then she got an email from some guy in Nigeria who offered $3,000 for the $700 laptop.
Yeah. If you, send him $2,000 to begin with?
Yeah, I'm having trouble wiring my money to you. Please send $1,000.
Is it hot in here or is it just me?
It's pretty warm in here.
Man, it feels like cold downstairs. I crank up the heat and I'm like sweating like a pig. The only thing would make this even worse if I started farting.
I had burritos for dinner, Dan, so be warned.
I'm waiting.
Maybe I should have come over then because I had tacos for dinner.
It's just a Mexican theme tonight.
We'd have been peeling wallpaper.
So, Link, you got Slackware on your new laptop, right?
Yeah, I got my new IBM ThinkPad T23. I got Slackware 10.2 on it. It's a gorgeous thing to behold, let me tell you.
How do you like the eraser?
Of course, Slackware is good to begin with, but I like that. The little pointer, I like that better than trackpads because I have like these little stubby Irish fingers, and when you're trying to use a trackpad with one of those, it tends to like skip the cursor around the screen and things like that. So
little sausage fingers.
The little nipple is better. Yeah, the nipple is better.
I don't know. I like the touchpads.
I don't like.
I like nipples.
Who just came on?
Somebody jumped on. But
no, I tell you what.
Hello.
Oh, it's a drunkard.
Oh, hey. It's Alan.
He's pregnant.
Hey, what's up?
His ass hurts.
What? How you doing?
What'd you say? not too bad. How are you guys?
How was the party, man?
Good. You're taking a break, Alan. You go walk into the bathroom to wipe your butt off.
Aw.
No, it was quite enjoyable.
Did you do the Secret Santa?
I bet that's what he said.
Well, no, we did exchange gifts, though. But
was it a Secret Santa exchange, or did you know who you were?
No, we didn't. Yeah, we didn't know who the other person was. No.
So what'd you get?
Tim McGraw CD.
Lucky.
I got a 5-inch black and white TV.
Really? Ooh, that's not too bad. That's pretty cool.
No, actually, I did pretty well. I figure even though I can't, there's nothing to receive because it's like, you know, got an antenna on it, but it does have video and audio inputs on it, so I think I'm going to go dig up my X10 cameras on it and plug my X10 thing in there and see what happens.
That's pretty cool. You can start making your own porno movies. Tim McGraw.
Yeah, that'd be funny.
Oh, no.
So have you done anything techy this week, Alan?
That would be frightening.
Alan, when you're working on computers,
No.
When you're working on computers, do you use a static wrist strap?
Not in years, no.
Way to be, Alan.
It's too freaking gay.
Living life on the edge.
I like just sort of like, you know, I try to like ground myself on the machine beforehand, but, you know, touch some metal or something, but knock on wood, I've always been lucky.
Well, this week I got two newbie installs I'm going to be doing. This lady I work with, she gave me her daughter's laptop. She's had it with Windows. She's reinstalled it 3 times. And she keeps getting viruses, even though she's running virus software. So I think I'm gonna put Kubuntu on that machine. And the other machine I'm gonna do is my dad's machine. I haven't decided what I'm gonna put on his machine.
You said you were gonna do the Canonics.
Yeah, I've been waiting for the new version to come out, but it's not out yet. So
why not Arch?
I might. You know what I was thinking of doing? I was thinking of trying that.
Mandrake.
No.
Mandriva.
That easy version of doing Arch for my dad that Judlin recommended. Underground Desktop. Have you seen his blog post?
Is that Desktop Linux? Underground Desktop. Yeah,
it's based on Arch. It's fully Arch compatible. What it is it lets you do a really quick and easy install of Arch where everything's pre-configured for the most part. And it's basically Arch is running on your system, so I'm seriously considering that for my dad's machine.
Give him Gen 2.
So you guys haven't had any problems at all running Arch lately?
I'm liking it, man.
No little issue popped up or anything like that?
I'm really liking it.
Since I unplugged my Arch box to put my old man's computer on here, I haven't rebooted into Arch yet. I'm torn because I really... I'm happy with my Ubuntu system, but I'm like, it was really nice with the Arch system right here. It was really cool using it. And I, like I said, I got the video, I got the MAME on there, and I'm like, can it really be this great and easy? Can it? Is it all that I want it to be? What would be missing?
A few packages for certain applications. I actually installed... Resound, the new version of Resound. It wasn't in the official repositories for Arch. I wound up going to the ARU, which is a repository of package builds. What you do is you download the file, you extract the tarball of it. There's this file called package build. And basically what it is you run make package, it'll compile the package off of that, and it'll create an Arch package for you, and then you do pacman-capital-a.
It's
kind of
like a Gen 2 port there. You just,
yeah.
It compiles it automatically.
But it's supported in the package manager.
Right. It's just like, you know, a kind of similar to emerging it. You're watching the screensaver go by.
But it's pretty quick.
Not when you do that. Have you done that with many different packages yet?
I've done about four of them.
Have any of them failed?
No.
Huh. Let's try that.
Check it out, man.
Like I said, I mean...
So you guys have completely given up on Slackware then, huh?
No, I use Slackware at work all the time.
I got one Slack box at work.
Shame on you all.
I got the server here Slack, and I got three machines at work running Slackware. I'm not giving... No way would I give up on Slack.
I was going to say, shame on you.
No. No. Wow, what are you running on your desktop?
What I'm trying to figure out is what... Look. On my desktop, I'm running Ubuntu.
No, but you're running Slackware on your laptop, aren't you?
But I'm also running three Slackware laptops and... Slackware on my wife's computer. Slackware on, like, eight servers at work.
And Pat, you're running...
I probably will switch back to Slackware for my desktop as well because it's just faster.
I'm running Debian on my blog server, Canonix on my workstation, and Arch Linux on this laptop, and I have a machine at work that I'm running Slackware 10.2 on. I'm going to check out the new version of Canonix. The problem with the new version of Canonix from what I hear is it won't let you upgrade from the current version, so you'll have to do a fresh install. I'm seriously considering just wiping that out eventually and going to Arch for that.
Yeah, I don't like distributions. And Ubuntu kind of says for you to do the same thing, that instead of upgrading to just do a reinstall of the latest version. Now, I never do that, of course. You know, but for a newbie kind of person, might make more sense. You know what? Screw it. I don't see why. Right, Link? Force it.
Right.
Force it. You know what? Somebody mentioned we can run Linspire like John Watson. Hey, more power.
Hey, whatever, man. Whatever works for you. You know, the whole thing with distros is there's so many of them out there. You try them out. You see what you like, and you go with it. If it works for you, stick with it.
Yep.
And speaking of John Watson, again, on his Not this, the one that came out this past week, I think the week before, he was talking about Amarok. And making mention that one of the nice things about it is you can set it that it'll only download like five of the latest shows from the podcast feed or the RSS feed. And I don't, maybe it's just me, but generally, you know, when I build the RSS feed, I limit it to 10 shows. Like, we don't have show 1 through 115 on that feed.
Like some other shows do.
Right. And I don't see the benefit of putting all your
shows... Some shows do.
Right. I don't see the benefit of putting every single show in the RSS feed. Like the 10, 15 tops maybe? But, you know, I just don't see it. Maybe that's just me. Maybe that's where I'm mistaken. Maybe I made a mistake along the way and I should be putting all our shows on the feed. Like, I know I add us to the BinRev feed. I only have like four or five shows on the BinRev feed, and I knock those right off after we, add a new one, take the old one off. First in, first out. Right, Link? Alan?
Right.
Yes. Well, it's good to be able to limit them when you download.
You got that lag thing going on again, Dan.
Try out a show or something real quick. Yeah, I know. I've heard it here.
Well, the one thing...
I'm hearing an echo every now and then.
The one thing about us is we're open to trying out new distros. You know, I'm not locked into one. I'm willing to check out something new if it's better. I don't have a problem doing that. And I think most people should have an open mind when it comes to trying out distros.
I'd be more open to trying out distros if I have more systems.
Yeah, that's probably a problem for most people. But the thing the thing that you can do is you can get a hot swap drive. I mean, hard drives are freaking cheap these days. Pick up a 40 or an 80 gig drive and just swap it out and try a different distro on it.
But the only thing I don't like about that is if I'm sitting down there, like I use that machine every day. And I've gotten so accustomed to it. Now, if I went to another system and started using that, all my stuff's on there. If I did a hot swap, now, I could use a different home directory. But, you know, if a version of an application is older or newer on one than compared to the other, you know, there's a possibility that you may have some problems. You may. That's not generally the case, but, you know what I'm saying?
We're not a bunch of fanboys. Even though, you know, I've talked up Canonix and I'm talking up Arch Linux. You know, it changes, you know. You try the new thing. It's the greatest and the latest for a while. You know, the real test is whether or not it's still going to be running 6 months from now, a year from now, 3 years from now.
And then you always come back to Slackware.
Not so much.
Which runs and runs.
I like Debian, man, a lot. I like the Debian distros quite a bit.
Right, which is the old Slackware box that's still running back in the closet, right?
Everybody's different, man. Slackware is solid, man. Don't get me wrong.
Arr. SDL will save us all. That's all I got to say.
What's SDL?
Simple. Direct layer. Isn't it simple? Direct layer? What's SDL stand for, Link?
I think it's like simple direct layer or something like that, right?
Isn't it? I'm being an idiot.
I have no idea.
What'll come up first? Simple Direct Media Layer. That's right. Simple Direct Media Layer. SDL.
That's it.
Good stuff. We should get some SDL developers on.
Go ahead, man.
No, I was hinting at you. You are awesome at setting up these interviews. You're the man, Pat. You're the man. Oh, there goes my headphones.
Anything I could do to help, man.
You are the man. If it wasn't for Pat, no interviews.
That's not true. You've gotten some decent interviews, man.
No. If it wasn't for Pat, there would be no interview set up.
Oh.
That's what I mean.
You've gotten some good interviews. We talked to the guy who wrote that book. We've talked to the Archie guy. That was cool.
No, but you set all that up, didn't you?
No, the Archie guy was yours.
No. It was?
Yeah, the Archie guy was your guy.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, we got some good ones coming up, man.
Who's coming up in the future?
I don't have anybody set for January, but they've agreed to do an interview in January. I've got Judd Vinant from Arch Linux. That should be good. I've got Dean Haglund, who was the guy from The Lone Gunman from The X-Files and the spinoff series.
And awesome.
I've got somebody from HP coming on. So the next week or two, I should have some firm dates for these people. So.
And we're going to finally find out where that Linux HP laptop is.
You know, I'm going to ask that question.
We should try and get Mark Shuttleworth on. The only problem with him is he's in... He's in that same kind of like almost the same time zone or relatively
Europe,
same
yeah.
that the Alug radio
that,
guys
that's
are
the
makes it easier.
To anybody in Europe, man, you know they're like six to 8 hours ahead of us. So it's 5 to 8 hours ahead of us. A little rough sometimes. You know, I don't understand how we got people listening to us live in Europe, man. Our European listeners, man, you guys are awesome that you're listening live.
Maybe they're installing iPod Linux too.
Yeah, and then there's some dedicated people right there listening to us at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning.
Hey, who's the lone gunman dude?
Dean Haglund.
And we appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And somebody had mentioned
Dean
that.
Dean Haglund.
Our frapper has exceeded
300.
300.
You know what's funny, man? Number 300 is my second cousin from Spain.
Oh, yeah?
Omar.
Is he using Linux?
Yeah, he is actually. He is a chemist. He works in pharmaceutical, and he's been getting into Debian. He's been using lately.
Does he use it at work too?
Yeah, that's what he uses at work. Yeah,
so use it at home.
4 a.m.
Yeah,
in the UK.
He's a chemist. So shout out to Omar, man.
You said shout out, not shut up, right?
Shout out.
So we know shout out, not shut up.
Viva Asturias.
That's awesome. And so you got two newbie installs coming up.
Yep.
And Link's doing a newbie Windows install.
Windows XP home.
All the way. Service Pack 2. I just think of all those Windows machines that are going to be purchased over the holidays. You know, you come down.
My dad got me a computer from Best Buy.
Yeah. Plug that sucker in, and a week later, it's going back to Best Buy because it doesn't boot anymore. Or CompUSA or anything, because it's infested with viruses. And
the most satisfying thing about my laptop was I was able to get the Windows decal off really easy.
Designed for Windows XP.
Oh, I got that thing right off of there.
Works best with Windows. I want a works best with Linux.
Absolutely, man.
Sticker.
Well, one of the newbie installs that I'm doing is my one of my coworkers' teenage daughter. Her friends, she mentioned to her friends that she's going to get Linux installed, and they were like, "Oh, you're going to have problems with that because you're not technical." I bet you she's going to love it, man. Once it's on there and it's running.
You slap him in the face when they said that to her.
I wasn't there, so.
You know what? I think I made a mistake last week when we were talking about the release of the Broadcom reverse engineer drivers. And apparently it does work with the Apple Extreme, Airport Extreme, although it's only
8.11. Compile from source?
I haven't looked at the exact specifications, but it's something about you got to compile it. The driver. You have to compile all the drivers. There is no binary or anything or package that I have seen yet. I didn't think for legal reasons they can't do it. But you got to use the source code. I think it uses something like softmac.com. And I haven't gotten around to trying it out yet. I've been too lazy. But maybe I'll look into it.
Check it out, man. I'm curious to see if you can get it going.
Yeah. And I still got to make that video stuff. And
that's right. Did you finish your DVD?
No. I Neverwinter Nights destroyed that for me. That was the end of that. I have the video. I just, you know, and I got to give props to Kino. I was really impressed. Because I came up here, and when I recorded the video of my daughter installing Ubuntu, it was 44 minutes. Plugged that sucker in. Came back 45 minutes later, was still recording it, worked fine, not a hiccup. So it worked really great. Now I just got to go through and edit it, but that's... And what's really nice is I can close it and open it, and close it, the application open, and it comes up lightning fast. Like when I do that with iMovie, you know, it comes up, it loads the video, it does this, and you know, then it come back. But this thing, it's loading in like 44 minutes of video, in a snap now.
That's cool.
I can start editing and stuff. What I haven't tried yet, and I was thinking about this, I was playing around with cutting out sections of the video, because I cut that section of the video out where Daddy's got a gun. Can you take a clip and cut multiple portions?
Why would you do that?
What? Why would I do what?
Cut out the portion where Daddy's got a gun.
No, I cut that specific part out to play it out of there.
That was pretty funny, man.
No, what I mean is I have when I pulled it in, it's like one clip right there. Can I take like the beginning part of that clip and then, you know, another piece, another like maybe the first 5 minutes, and then get rid of whatever in there the next 10 minutes and then the next 5 minutes? Can you do that? Can you put multiple start and stop spots on a clip?
I think you can.
So it's just I didn't think about that before. I was just wondering how that's going to work. Yeah, he's got a gun. Install that Linux.
That's funny.
Put the disk in.
So where's that?
Put the disk in.
Is that going to wind up on Infonomicon video?
It depends on how well it turns out.
If I were you, I would cut two versions of it. I would cut a short 10, 12 minute version. And then I would cut a longer 20 to 30 minute version.
Yeah, I thought, you know, I thought about that. I definitely will. I'm thinking I'm definitely going to cut a shorter one, but I might, you know, just have the full thing.
Yeah, put it up as an ARC.
I don't know if I'm going to put the whole thing up. That's a lot. I mean, you figure a 40 minute video.
Not the raw video. I'm talking like the longer version.
Right, the longer version. But if 40 minutes is going to be a couple hundred megs, isn't it?
Yeah, something like that.
At least. That's a lot of space. That's why I'll push it over on Infonomica.
Hey, it's on their show.
It's always you do something like that, and I do it, and I'm like, she did a damn good job installing it. And she basically pretty much made all the choices herself. The only thing I said to her was when she couldn't read the word, you know, or like partition. She didn't know what that word was. So, when she's trying par,
hey, man,
it's like
she's
partition.
Freaking 7 years
well,
old.
She's 7 years
man.
Old, right.
Come on.
And then she'd finish reading it, and then she'd be like, what do I do? And I said, well, what are you going to do? What do you want to do? And then she'd just do what she wanted to do. The hardest part, like I said.
See, I was really impressed with the whole thing when Dan was telling me about it, because I run into people who are 40 years old that can't read the damn words down there.
Yeah. And that's the hardest thing, just reading. That's it. You know, she sat there and she came to the part where she had to choose her language, and it came up automatically selected for English, and she looked down and she's like, is that right? And I'm like, well, what do you think? She's like, yeah, what language do you speak? I speak English, American English. And she chose that. And then it was the keyboard, and it was highlighted for U.S. keyboard. And I'm like, she's like, I live in the United States, so let's choose that one. Oh, and the time zone. She didn't know, she wasn't sure on her time zone. So I had to tell her we lived in Eastern. But, you know, somebody who's 20 or 30 years old
should know that.
Should know what time zone they live in. Yeah. And, you know, presented with the choice of, English, United States English, or, English UK, or English Australian, or French. I mean, I think they can make that choice.
It would help.
Right. The partitioning, once she read the partitioning information, there was the four choices. There was resized Windows partition, because this originally had a Windows. It was Windows 98 on there. She said, the option was resize that partition.
How satisfying was it to blow Windows away, man? I always get a perverse thrill from that.
To resize the Windows partition, to erase it and do a full install, to do there was two customized installs, customized partitioning, and she didn't know exactly, what she should do there. And I helped her out a little bit. I said, we chose to erase this and, do a fresh install. And once, she had that in her head, that was what we did. She chose the right option. But I think, reading over that, if there was a way that they could explain partitioning a little better, or have like some kind of help thing that would pull up a little dialogue box that would say, this is what we mean by partitioning. Before you can use, before the hard drive, you can install the operating system, or an operating system could use a hard drive, it needs to be set up so that the operating system can use it. Something like that. I don't know. Happy day.
I'm looking forward to blowing away Windows on that laptop.
On what laptop? Oh, on your friend's laptop.
Yeah, my coworker's daughter's laptop. She's going to like it, I think.
Yeah.
I guess three installs is enough of Windows for them.
They like anything once they figure out it doesn't crash on them all the time.
Yeah, no viruses, doesn't crash.
Yeah.
It's easy to get nice new software, pretty easy.
Yeah, oh, here we go.
The Burritos are kicking in.
Damn. Damn. Well, getting close to that quitting time, gentlemen. Any words for the masses?
Next week.
Yeah, I just want to make sure to wish everybody a very Merry Christmas, and have a safe New Year as well.
Same to you.
Well, where are you going to be next week?
I'm going to be here, probably. Probably.
What are you guys doing for Christmas? Going anywhere?
Who?
What? Us.
Cruise to the parents' house.
I know, I'm here.
I've got everybody coming over on Christmas. Everybody.
Yeah, same here. But everybody's like my parents.
No, I got like brother-in-laws and their families and my parents and my family.
It's my wife's birthday today.
Happy birthday.
I told her you can't go anywhere because I got the show to do.
I'm going to open up her presents and then I'm going to take a nap.
Tomorrow we're going out to Hibachi.
Which one?
Ichiban.
Where's that?
Airport Road.
How do you like
off it? Airport, Catasauqua Road. I love that place.
Yeah, I was
go there for sushi all the time. I've never had hibachi there. I go for sushi all the time. No, all the time means once every couple of months, but I really do like it. It's nice. The only place I've had hibachi is at Roboto's.
Dome Arigato.
Yeah, Roboto's. And that was really good. But
I haven't had hibachi in a long time. We went to this place down by where I work a couple months back, but that was the last time I ever had any.
Any of you guys see the video of
I have to go there.
The sushi, Kevin Rose, he was in Japan, and he had sushi at this restaurant. And basically, they you catch the fish out of a pond, and they cut the fish open, and the thing is still moving, and you're eating the sushi while the thing is flopping around.
No, I didn't see that.
It's pretty sick.
It doesn't get any fresher than that.
Seriously.
Yeah, my daughter said, "We're not going to bring the presents to the restaurant, are we? Because what if they slip and they drop the knife and it lands on mommy's present and breaks it?" I don't think that's going to happen. You know, we talk about this like every couple of months, but we definitely, when the weather gets nicer, we have to go back to Tiki Bar.
Yeah, we got to do that.
Tiki Bar.
Man. I wanted to go last time, but I had my nephew's confirmation. I had to go to.
Prioritize, man. Prioritize. You should have sent a video camera in your place.
Bar, yeah.
I think it's open to all year long, but it's all indoor.
Now, that place, they have, like, all exotic meats and stuff, and you cook it yourself.
They have some, yeah, they got alligator, ostrich.
You can get, like, alligator down there.
Not like, I think emu they had there. Tube steak.
An emu is like an ostrich, right?
Yeah, well, kind of, yeah. Something like that.
We'll hit it. Now we got to do the live show from the titty bar.
Where you at? Did you see that Aqua Teen for Boost Mobile? That Aqua Teen? No, Pat? No, you don't watch
Aqua
Teen. No. Hey, Alan, Saturday night, Perfect Hair Marathon.
Which is, Perfect Hair, cool, I'll have to record it.
I think every single episode.
I've seen two episodes, and I still haven't figured out what the fuck's going on with it.
That's a great...
With the exception of the guy throwing money down on the floor for the chick and going, banana, banana. But I have no clue what's going on. And I've even watched the one that was on last week. I even watched that over again to try to figure out what the hell am I missing. So I guess I got to see it from the beginning.
Yeah, I think there's, what, six episodes?
Is it that many? Okay. Because I've only seen two.
Yeah, I saw number two, I think, or one and four. And I missed something. And I saw this week's where they had the motorcycle race to Tuna Mountain.
Well, I didn't see that one. Maybe it's on. It may be on the myth box. Maybe I missed it.
They're all on this weekend.
All right, I'll have to go look for them. Cool. Time to get rid of some stuff on the myth box anyways. I'm running out of space again.
Burritos are kicking in.
On you. Yeah. Just put that ass up to the microphone. Give everybody else a listen.
Oh, wait till after the show. Oh.
God.
Nothing like White Castle.
Oh, God. I can't do White Castle, man.
That's I love deadly. White Castle.
Oh, that stuff gives you the shits, man.
There's one down by where I work, and we were down. My parents lived down that way, and I took Carolyn there because she had never been to one, and I hadn't been to one since like high school. We went to this one because it's the same one. It's been there for years. Went to it, man. I barely made it back to Bethlehem at the time. Oh,
you're squeezing your ass together.
Oh, it was touching cotton all the way, man.
So you didn't shit yourself.
We got to about Clinton, and it was like simultaneous to both of us. It was like, you know, you get that sudden movement in your gut, and you know it's too late. You know, it's like, oh, my God, I've got to get home.
You got your ass clenched tight.
Oh God, it was. Yeah, you're driving. And it's like you braced it. You got your foot braced up against the floorboards, and you sort of like standing straight up in the car because it's like you're clenching so freaking hard. It was bad. I'll never go back there again. I should have learned my lesson back in high school because it did the same damn thing to me there. But
okay, more for me.
When I was in college, man, I went to Seton Hall. It was a White Castle right down the road from the campus, man. Oh, my God. Too many nights, man, eating that stuff.
It's great, man. If you want to, I think they should use that instead of, like, you know, when you know, they give you that stuff to drink when they're going to, like,
barium enema.
Do the you know, when you instead of enemas, yeah. Here, have a White Castle and come see me in the morning, yeah?
Go eat some White Castle.
You'll be all clean for whatever the doctor has to do, you know?
You don't need a high colonic. Just eat a bunch of White Castles.
There you go.
Oh, man, that's disgusting.
All right, now that we've got to the toilet humor, it's time to go.
You going to the toilet?
Not right now, no.
Alan passed out in the toilet at the party.
Oh, man.
He passed out and they used him as a toilet.
Jeez. That's bad.
Nah, man.
So what do you say, some Frapper shout-outs before we cut out?
Yeah, go ahead.
Alrighty. Yeah. We've got Lindsay Hull from Rockhampton, Queensland, Australia. We got Big Wave Dave from San Jose, California. We've got Quivmo from Boise, Idaho. We've got Cheeseman316 from Uniontown, PA. We've got Will Jordan from Spartanburg, South Carolina. We've got Tim Entrop from Quincy, Illinois. We've got John from Greensboro, North Carolina. We've got Jeff Sawyer from San Jose, California. We've got Shane Tarasio from Elwood City, PA. We've got Machine Screw from Macon, Georgia. We've got Dima from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. And my cousin Omar from Aviles, Asturias, Spain.
Cousin Omar!
Yeah, there you go. Cousin Omar.
Everybody needs a cousin Omar.
That's all she wrote, folks. Alrighty. I'd like to wish everybody...
Hey, everybody have a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to everybody, man. Enjoy the holiday.
Happy Hanukkah.
Yes, a happy Hanukkah.
Kwanzaa, everything all else.
Salam alaikum.
And happy holidays, everybody.
Happy Ramahana Kwanzmas.
And
happy Saturnalia.
We'll see you next week. I'm tired. Maybe I'll just skip to doing the shows tonight and do it tomorrow.
Yeah
how about that, huh? That would piss everybody off. wait, before
we
so I'm clear on this. Am I doing a high bit?
Cut the file. And if you got anybody in the listening audience is interested in being one of the participants for the BitTorrent mirror as one of the main seeders, send us an email. We'll add you to the list. And then we'll let you guys know when the file's available, and then we'll announce the file. And then everybody can download it.
Okay.
Is that clear?
So I'm going to cut it but not do anything with it.
Right.
All right.
So our listeners,
I'm going to cut it and enjoy it for myself.
Yes. Our listeners have to let us know if they're willing to be one of the main mirrors for that.
Right. Okay.
Alrighty.
Alright.
Episode 115 is history.
Yep. Going out with a
good
whimper.
Night, all.
Here comes the music. Shut up.
Good night, everybody.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte. Whenever I'm on the internet, I listen to the Linux Link Tech Show.
Bang. Dun 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 dun.
Who dares?
Boom, 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 boom.
You know I want to tap that ass, right?
So we can paint anything we want?
anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Mm, yeah, with my tongue brush. It's over.